Mr. Hayward, Reel 22. We're talking about your time at Bredstone, and I wondered about the actual duties you were on during that period. What were you actually doing day to day? You mentioned you drove some of the Liberty trucks, but what else would you be doing?
We'd be back to the normal UK routine then. We'd have to be smarted around, everything had to be scrubbed and polished, and the regimental area, the street we'd taken over, had to look smart. They'd rigged up a sentry box at the end of the street at each end and had a barrier there, a lifting barrier, and a pole, a lift-up pole. So it was a closed area to the civilians, and there'd be a sentry on duty day and night, so we got involved in guard duties again on this.
Did you object to this sort of back to spit and polish?
I think we rather expected it. You know, once the battling was over, we rather expected it to return to that, because obviously the powers that be were wanting to impress the local civilians, and so we had to go along with that. In the meantime, as far as the maintenance of the trucks was concerned, this was a very interesting period to me, because at last I was free to do some what I call proper maintenance on the truck.
So what would you do?
Well, I remember spending weeks and weeks, week after week, every time we went down to do maintenance. Some of the other chaps weren't really interested. They were naturally told to scrub their trucks and get them clean inside and out and underneath. But I went further than that. I went to the stage of repainting my truck, inside and out and underneath. And I even managed, because I played on the fact that this was the oldest truck in the regiment and had done a big mileage, I played on that fact and persuaded the workshops to order me a new engine. So I went with a new engine for the truck, which they were delighted to fit, you know. That came out from the UK. And so, of course, it was a popular truck for Liberty excursions, and I did get involved in that quite a bit.
What would you do? What was it like?
Well, you'd basically, in those days, unlike England, we wouldn't tend to have evening trips out. We would be mostly daytime at the weekends, so it could end up as a Saturday trip. Probably afternoon, if you guess, going into the early evening, you know, as long as it was still daylight. So I'd get involved in those weekend trips. There was also, I did have a short leave. I've got it here. They'd arranged for the troops to have a bit of a short leave on an island in the North Sea called Four. It's spelled F-O-H-R. And I've got it here, down here, 15th of August, Jap War was over. And so on the 20th of August, I had this short leave to Four, which lasted a couple of days on this island.
What was that like?
Oh, very pleasant. I think we stayed in a small hotel, and we were able to get out onto the beaches, which were quite sandy and pleasant. Nothing very special about it. It was just a sort of a place where you could relax. And I would say it was, from my memory, I wouldn't have thought I would have wanted to go there on holiday in particular, because because it was in the North Sea, it was rather a breezy island, quite near the coast. It wasn't a long boat trip to get to it. It was visible from the coast. But as I say, North Sea sort of climate, very breezy and a bit chilly, even with the sun.
Now, how did you react? There had been a possibility of the regiment going out to the Far East. I don't know how serious that was, but how did you react to the end of the Japanese war, and thus the end of the possibility you'd go out?
Oh, that must have been a very big relief to know that the whole thing was over. After that, it became just a question of how long was it going to be before we started to get out into civilian life again. Because as I wasn't going to make the army my career, I mean, there had been suggestions. People had been asked whether they wanted to take on another job in the army and with a view to promotion and that sort of thing. Things had been happening in that sense, but I wasn't particularly interested. The only thing I took on during that period was that one of the officers, Lieutenant Reed, had started French classes to fill up the time, and I joined in that, took part in that.
Any other recreations or things during this? Because you were before
them. They did arrange, during the summer months, they did arrange to take truckloads of troops out to a local lake, Lake O'Brien, and have swimming. We were able to go for walks. I think it was still advisable to take a gun with you, including that thing. But I don't think we didn't tend to do that sort of thing because we weren't really clued up as to where we were or what we were going to achieve if we did go off. So we tended to use the facilities back at the camp, such as they were.
Were you aware of the displaced persons camp nearby, Soviet nationals?
Yes, we certainly had sightings of these people occasionally when we were out, not very impressed with them. They seemed to be in pretty poor circumstances, and at that time the whole atmosphere, even with German people, was that they were in a dodgy situation in that they had to wait for the supply situation when the war finished to get back to normal. One of the things I did see, which I found very upsetting, was that this was probably when I set off to go on leave to the UK. As we were on this train moving out of some area, there were young German children, barefooted, almost naked, wandering along the track looking for scraps that had been thrown out of the windows. And that was the situation as the war finished with Germany. So the supply situation was obviously quite dodgy at that stage from a civilian point of view.
But what about displaced persons camps? That's what I was trying to...
Yes, displaced persons camps were very primitive, what we saw of them. Some of them just barbed wire enclosures. Whether that was to keep them in or keep others out, I don't know, but they were probably making use of whatever had been left behind by the Germans.
But you do, because the regiment actually had a camp that it was in charge of, was guarding. You don't remember that?
I don't remember it as being sort of in the immediate vicinity of Bredstone, but obviously if we had charge of one, there would be somewhere near, and we would see it occasionally.
Now, what about the disbandment of, well, general demobilisations, and then following that, the disbandment of the regiment?
Before that happened, I must mention that I did have a leave to Paris on the 29th of July, which I got here. I was back at Bredstedt on the 6th of August, so I had a nice leave in Paris, which was very pleasant. And I have a photograph which shows that I was obviously part of a large group who were kept together, but from the division, so I would be probably only one of a couple from my regiment amongst that group. I remember going to the Folies Bergères in Paris at that time, my companion decided about halfway through that it was a bit of a joke. We didn't think much of it at all, so we left halfway through the performance. We'd had enough. On the 30th of September 1945, I set off for a short leave to Ypres. And I've got here that on the 1st of October, I spent the night in a barracks at Brussels. So that was obviously the method they had in those days of getting me to Ypres, was via Brussels. So that was the first night. And on the 2nd of October, I met my wife at Ypres Station.
Future wife?
Future wife, yes, future wife.
Well, you decided to get married. I mean, was that quite unusual amongst...
Apparently not, no. Years later, when I went on a visit to Antwerp, it was sponsored by the city of Antwerp. It was a 50th anniversary. And the burgomaster of the town told us that he gave us a list of how many people were getting married from the forces in those days. And there were quite a lot, there was quite a lot going on. For instance, Lieutenant Reed, who conducted these French classes during our period at Bredstead, he also married a girl from Ypres. He became, after the war, a correspondent for Reuters, and he ended up in Portugal, but he's now dead, and his wife is still out in Portugal.
So, anything else happened?
Yes, I obviously had a nice leave at Ypres, because on the 13th of October I left for Bruges in the evening, 6:35 train, and then caught the 9:46 p.m. Bruges to Hamburg. Well, 15th of October I got back to Bridgestone after that leave, and then I had a course on the 21st of October, the 3rd of November, I had a course at New Munster, it's called New Munster, in NEUMUNSTER, in English and History. So it looks as though I was taking part in anything that was going.
These were educational courses, were they?
Yes.
What were they like? I mean, were they of value?
Oh, yes, they were. I remember one of the things we were asked to do in one of these courses was as a class, we were asked to write a short story. And I think I've still got a copy of that somewhere, that I wrote this story in the required time, and I've got the top marks for it. So I was very pleased with that.
Were these courses tailored to passing exams, or were they just purely educational?
They were purely educational. They were doing anything to keep the troops from getting thoroughly bored. And so that was another thing that had gone on before the regiment broke up. What caused the regiment to break up was the fact that, as I think I told you earlier, most of the chaps in the regiment had joined up in 1939. So there was a huge proportion of the surviving members of that part of the regiment that were in 21 Group. And 21 Group came up for demobilisation around Christmas time, 45. And I suppose when they analysed the situation, they realised that there wouldn't be many left in the regiment after that. So I remember that they had a grand celebration, a real beery evening, I think, with the aid of beer supplied by local German breweries in barrels. And so they had a good send-off. And it wasn't long after that that the regiment officially broke up. And early January, in fact it was on the 14th of January 1946, I was posted to the 5th Royal Enniskillen Dragoon Guards. at a place called Itzehoe.
14th.
14th of January, 46. And the place was Itzehoe, which is spelled I-T-Z-E-H-O-E. And I gather it was near Hamburg.
And what were you doing with this unit?
Well, they asked me what I wanted to do when I got to this new regiment, and I'd heard through the grapevine that people who worked in squadron offices didn't have to do guard duties. So after 5 years of guard duties, this sort of interested me. Well, I'm only waiting for demobilisation. Anything that gets me off guard duties that I can manage to do will be heaven. So I got this permanent job in the, I think it was C Squadron pay office, along with a chap called Donnett, D-O-N-N-E-T-T.
And what were your duties?
Well, you can imagine that that because I got off guard duties, that didn't mean that I could sleep peacefully every night, because we were supposed to be manning the telephone. And so therefore, one of us had to be wakeful. And and of course, it would be, if one of the others went on leave, as it happened, the other one would have to be wakeful all the time that the other person was on leave. But there would be paperwork to do, but I don't remember being involved in an awful lot of paperwork. There'd be the weekly paper raids. But at that time, the chaps didn't have much to spend their money on, so a lot of the chaps simply let their pay pile up, as I did, I think. So paying out the whole squadron would probably be a very rare event. I had another leave down to Ypres on the 26th of January, arrived on the 28th, and on February the 2nd I got here and I bought wedding rings for each of us. So things were getting serious by that time. Then I went back to Itzehoe on the 10th of February. Basically, at Itzehoe and the other barracks where I went later on, there was very little to do.
Where was the other barracks?
The other barracks was at a place further away called Munster.
That was with the same unit?
Same unit, yes. So I went to Munster eventually. I'm not sure whether I've got that here.
Doesn't matter too much.
Doesn't matter.
And anything happened? I mean, did you get married while you were out there?
Did I get married while I was out there? Yes, I did. Before that happened, by the way, I got here and I went on another little course. This was a religious course this time. I went to a place called Church House at Preetz, a place called Preetz. And it took me a long time to discover where that was, but it was in Germany.
And what was that course about?
It's spelled P-R-E-E-T-Z. And that was just simply a bit like a sort of retreat. It was just a relaxing religious course, just to sort of brush up our religious knowledge. And it was a very, very pleasant little village, almost like being in a cathedral close, with this ancient church as the centre point, and very old German cottages surrounding the area. And we were billeted in this big house altogether, which is where the course took place, and we'd have occasional visits inside this church. And I thought you could almost imagine that you were back in England then, because you seem so far away from any war-like atmosphere. This village had obviously not been damaged. So that was very pleasant. I have one or two pictures of that period. Another leave to Ypres, April 10th. I got here on April the 15th. I left EPA, that's obviously to go back to the regiment, with Lieutenant Reed, so we travelled back together. So that's interesting, because I was wondering whether any of the other 5 and 4 for men got transferred with me to the 5th Royal Enniskillen. And I haven't discovered any, but obviously this one officer, Lieutenant Reed, went there.
Is there anything else, general points rather than specific dates?
General points. Well, the only other thing was that it was a very boring time, both at Itzehoe and Ember and Munster, because of the fact that we weren't engaged in anything like, well, I was a squadron officer clerk anyway, so I wasn't having anything to do with vehicle maintenance, I wasn't driving. I was simply a clerk then, and I had to get used to the idea for the sake of avoiding guard duty.
So you were bored?
I was bored, because there wasn't even any parading, as far as I recall. Again, that might have something to do with my job as clerk.
Might you have been better off doing guard duties and being allowed to do mechanical work?
Yes, I think with hindsight, I think I would have been. I think I would have found it more interesting, because from the accounts I've read from magazines produced by that regiment at the time, they obviously were engaged in training and the sort of duties we'd done in the 5th and 4th. But I was no longer any part of that.
Now, what about your marriage? When did that take place?
That was on the 27th of May, back in Ypres. And what happened then, on the 27th of May, we were getting ready for the wedding, and her father had ordered 2 carriages, horse-drawn carriages. Whether that was because of petrol shortage or not at that time, I don't know. But anyway, this seemed a lovely way to get married. So we had 2 carriages. And just before, perhaps possibly an hour before the movement was to start, suddenly one of the family came rushing into the back area where we were getting ready to say that there was an Englishman at the door who wanted to speak to me. And her mother said, "Oh, send him away. We're too busy at this moment." But then this family said that he says he's Jeff's dad. So he'd flown over unexpectedly via Croydon Airport, as it was in those days, to Brussels, and he made his way down to Ypres by train and got there just in the nick of time. So they hastily had to find a lady to accompany him in this carriage, and Dad had a thoroughly good time at our wedding. We actually had the wedding feast in a little hotel adjacent to the place where Steele Brownlee had come down to Ypres at the advance party and met this lady, Kathy Pratt, there, who'd been shot at by the Germans during the war.
Were you given any married quarters after that?
No married quarters. Mary certainly didn't want to come back with me. In fact, we didn't even think about it. It never occurred to me that there might be such things as married quarters. I don't think there was any such thing in those days. You were wondering probably about the honeymoon. So we went off, because Dad had arrived, we didn't go off the next day as planned. We spent the next day showing him around Ypres. And our honeymoon actually started, and we set off with Dad because he had to go to Brussels, and that was the direction we were going in, because we were going down to Dinant in the Ardennes with that beautiful scenery that I've discovered through the Battle of the Bulge, and we were going there to a hotel called the Hotel de Commerce, which looked out on a stretch of the hills with a viewpoint And when you went on a walk from there, you could go up to this viewpoint and look down on the hotel in reverse. But anyway, Dad, we left Dad hanging onto the rail of a tram heading for the airport in Brussels, and we set off by means of another railway down to the Ardennes, to Dinan. I got here on June 1st. We decided to walk out to Falmagnol.
Yeah.
And visit our old friends at this cafe where the regiment had been. Yes, after the honeymoon, we returned to Ypres, and I left Mary there at Ypres and got back to camp early in June. So I've got here that on the 17th of July my sixth year in the army begins, and on the 17th the regiment, that's the Inniskillings, left it safari for Munster.
Now you must have been looking forward to demobilisation by now after 6 years in the army.
Yes, I was indeed. I was getting very frustrated. And the name of the barracks in Munster, by the way, was York Barracks. Again, I had another leave in Ypres.
What about this attitude to demobilisation? I mean, how were you feeling?
I was feeling so depressed and frustrated at the inactivity, generally speaking. There obviously wasn't a lot of activity even in the squadron office. Not enough to satisfy me, who was still feeling rather energetic in those days. So I did try to take up playing tennis in the barracks, but it wasn't a great success. I had to abandon it because I didn't seem to make any progress with it.
Did you feel that? Did you understand why it was taking so long for you to be demobilised?
Yes. Well, in some ways, I suppose we could detect that there was a slowing up in the demobilisation programme, because possibly they weren't able to produce the civilian clothes with the necessary speed to demobilise large numbers of troops at once. So at one point the release slowed right down, and they said they had no news of when it was going to start up again, and this was very depressing. But eventually it got going again, because after all, after December 45, the 21 group going out, I was in 40 group, so I had 19 to go through. It didn't seem very many, but on the other hand, it was so slowly.
So what about when you were demobilised? What when was that? I thought it was September.
Yes, I know it was September. I don't remember the exact date, it would be in my demob book, but I believe it was about the 27th of September 1946 when I finally...
What was the process, as you remember? You started with leaving the Inniskillings.
Yes, I had to go through the process of getting to a place called Cuxhaven on the coast, Cuxhaven. And that was the place where you took ship to Hull, went across, so it was quite a long crossing, and it was at night, and that was rather depressing, because being at night in Chile at that time of the year, crossing the sea, we had to spend our time all cooped up down below, and nothing much to do, so we obviously tried to sleep. I think we had hammocks, from memory, some sort of hammock. And eventually arrived at Hull, where we took train. It was a through journey. We went right the way down to Guildford, to a demobilisation centre at Guildford.